Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Lead-laced water in Flint, Michigan, made children sick and caused a national uproar. Flint is hardly alone, according to an investigative series by Reuters. They found more than 3,000 locales with higher lead levels than Flint, double the lead toxicity. The lead reporter joins us this hour on Point, America's ongoing lead crisis. You can join us on air or online. Is there a lead problem in your community? Where? The water? Lead paint? Soil? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me this hour from New York is Michael Pell, data reporter for Reuters. He is a co-author of the investigative series on the hazards of lead poisoning across the United States called Unsafe at Any Level. You can link to his reporting at our website, onpointradio.org. Michael, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So what prompted this investigation?
Well, last year, when reporters across the country were looking at Flint, Michigan, my partner and I, Josh Schneer, were wondering what other communities were going to be the next Flint, what other communities had lead problems. And we started out with a series of articles about water from private wells that was highly acidic and could mobilize lead in plumbing fixtures. And we moved on to East Chicago. We looked at the testing rates, how many kids were actually being tested as opposed to how many kids should be tested, and found kids were not being tested as they should. And then from East Chicago, we found that there was a housing complex that was being evacuated. This made big news last summer. This housing complex was built on a Superfund site that was a former lead smelter. It was a former U.S. lead facility. And we found that, contrary to what federal health agencies had said, that kids in this area, in the census tract where this Superfund site was located, were not being tested as they should and had a higher rate of tested children with elevated lead levels. Mm. And so then we decided, let's get data like this from other states down to the census tract, so or in the zip code level, as granular as we could, to identify other communities that had not enjoyed the broad success that the United States has made over the last three or four decades in lowering elevated lead levels among children.
So we thought Flint was an aberration. In fact, what you're saying, it doesn't even rank among the most dangerous lead hotspots in this country.
That's what the testing data shows. I mean, you look at communities like Buffalo, New York, where there are zip codes where 40% of tested children had elevated lead levels. Mm. I mean, that's thousands and thousands, 8,000 children over the course of about 10 years. Communities like Baltimore, Cleveland, and then even lesser known communities like St. Joseph, Missouri, where still extremely high numbers of kids are testing with high lead levels.
I'm looking at your story here. I mean, you just go down the list. Pick a state, pick a town. Warren, Pennsylvania, 36% of kids had high lead levels. Goat Island, Texas, a quarter of the tests showed lead poisoning. Some pockets of Baltimore, Cleveland, Philly, elevated rates 40, 50%. I mean, so you looked at lead levels taken from blood work, and was it just from kids or adults as well?
That's right. We were looking at just at children under the age of six. The most health advocates recognize that lead is going to have the greatest impact on developing brains under the age of six.
So how hard is it to link lead levels in the blood to a specific factor, specifically water?
It's extremely difficult. Whether or not the lead comes from lead pipes or the solder in pipe joints, or it comes from paint dust, or it comes from soil, it's impossible to tell in most cases. Now, when you're doing an environmental, or when a government agency is doing an environmental review and they come in and they find lead dust on the floor or lead paint that's chipping and peeling, or perhaps lead in the child's water, then they can make a conclusion that usually that's where the lead is coming from. But it can be coming from a variety of places as well, even outside the child's home.
Right. So you're reporting, just to be clear, this goes beyond water. This is lead paint. This is industrial waste that gets into the soil. I mean, even down to toys that still have lead in them. Is that right?
Absolutely. We weren't focusing on exactly where the lead was coming from. We were focusing on where it ends up in the child's blood. And we were told that, and we found that not only can the exposure come from, like you were saying, the industrial waste, a deteriorating home, whether it be the lead paint or the old lead pipes, but also things like foodstuffs. We were just talking with the Erie County Health Department, and they were advising people to beware of the spices that they purchased. Mm. Turmeric from places in South Asia can be contaminated with lead.
Mm. Here's a pediatrician, Dr. Cynthia Brownfield. Her two daughters tested high for lead. She told Reuters TV that she expects the trend to continue in her town of St. Joseph, Missouri. One in five children tested there had elevated blood lead levels.
I think in St. Joseph, we're going to continue to see elevated lead levels unless something more is done. This is something that's affecting children for the rest of their life. We need to recognize there are some things that are more important than the money.
And here's a news report from CBS News 47 in Fresno, California, from March on the dangerously high levels of lead found in the city's 93701 zip code.
Health officials say nearly 14% of kids who were tested in the last 5 years in just one zip code in Fresno had dangerous levels of lead in their blood.
Mm. So poverty is often a potent predictor of lead poisoning. Michael Powell, did you find these lead poisoning cases in low-income neighborhoods? What was the demographic?
So absolutely that these lead poisoning cases were often found in low-income neighborhoods. If you look at places like Buffalo, where you have high poverty, old housing stock, that the houses are often not taken care of, and they the deteriorating paint or the old pipes can cause lead exposure. There are many advocates that believe that this is an overwhelmingly poor minority problem. But we also found that there are affluent communities and people of means who had children with elevated lead levels, like Dr. Brownfield, who you mentioned, and her youngest daughter had an elevated level of four times the CDC threshold.
So, is lead testing legally required in most states? You talked about testing rates before, and sometimes kids just aren't tested. What are the laws? What are the regulations, state to state?
The vast majority of states do not require universal screening. And by universal screening, I mean something, some sort of testing procedure that requires all children to be tested at some point, usually at ages 1 and 2 when they have the most hand-to-mouth activity and are most suspected of having lead exposure. Although that's somewhat controversial, too, there's a lot of people that are looking at the greater potential risk from water than what we've considered in the past, which would affect even younger children than 1 and 2. Though we also found that Medicaid children are supposed to be tested at 1 or 2, according to federal regulations, but the testing rate among those children is from state to state abysmal. Even these children who are considered at high risk are frequently – only a fraction of them are being tested.
And even in some states that require tests, kids didn't get them.
That's exactly right. I mean, there are states like Massachusetts that are doing a good job and testing a very high percentage of kids. New Jersey is doing a good job by most accounts in testing a relatively high percentage of kids. But then you look at other states and see that it's only a fraction of kids who are getting tested. And advocates tell us that that's a problem.
Let's get Ryan in here calling from Malden, Massachusetts. Hi, Ryan. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi. Jane, thank you very much for having me.
Yes, go ahead.
So I'm a city councilor in Malden, Massachusetts. It's a city of 65,000 people located 4 miles north of downtown Boston. And we have an unusual problem. We actually have the highest percentage of lead pipes in the state. And one of the things that I've been having trouble with is trying to get the city to reprioritize cosmetic road resurfacing projects like prioritizing the replacement of lead service lines. Mm. It's the infrastructure that you can't see versus the potholes that you can. So one of the things that I've had trouble doing is, in light of Flint, Michigan, how do we make it no longer a political liability, but a legal liability to no longer kick the can down the road.
Ryan, thank you. It's a great question. Michael Pell, I mean, it leads me to the broader point of how are these local governments responding to this lead crisis in their communities?
So some local governments, quite frankly, when we call them up and ask, they look shocked and surprised and they don't know what to do. This problem can be overwhelming for them. It's an expensive problem. It's a problem that's been going on for decades. And so some small some municipalities that we speak with don't know what to do, and they're not doing very much at all. Other municipalities, like the city of Buffalo and Erie County, recognize that this is a problem. They don't shy away from it. They don't try to pretend like it's not an issue. And they're pouring millions of dollars into lead abatement programs, testing programs, and even things like special education to help take care of the children after they've been diagnosed with lead poisoning lead exposure.
Why do you think the Flint water story was so publicized while most of the cases that you have found have gone unreported?
Well, I'm sure that people could study that and draw very complicated conclusions. But I think part of it is just the outrageous nature of many of the elements that surrounded the Flint debacle. The idea that public officials were not telling the truth. The fact that the water source had been switched, and so it was an actual action by government officials that led to an acute problem.
And in these, I mean, and a series of cover-ups in Flint, really. I mean, it was such a betrayal of trust. And in many of these communities,
yes,
that has not happened, right?
That's absolutely the case, that it was a betrayal of trust, and that these officials did downplay this every step of the way. Although we have seen things like this in other communities too.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we are diving into a big investigative series by Reuters about this nation's lead poisoning crisis that goes way beyond Flint, Michigan. And you can join the conversation. Have you done lead testing in your home? Did your child test high for lead poisoning? Does your community even test? You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're speaking this hour with Michael Pell, data reporter for Reuters. He's co-author of an investigative series on the hazards of lead poisoning across the United States called Unsafe at Any Level. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Joining me now from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, is Chris Marr, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. His latest piece is titled Pittsburgh Grapples with Lead in Water. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Welcome to you, Chris. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you. Describe the problem you found there.
Well, first, I guess I would say that Pittsburgh is not Flint. Pittsburgh is grappling with its own lead issue, but it's not as severe as Flint is. So last year, the city tested its lead using the limited sampling that it does, and it found lead levels of 22 parts per billion, which is above the federal action level of 15 parts per billion. More recently, in December, that level had fallen to 18 parts per billion. So it's, it triggered a lot of mandates. The city now has to remove about 7% of its lead pipes or lead service lines each year. And it's, has launched this public outreach campaign, and it's actually last week just started providing free water filters to residents.
So dig into this a little bit. Is this linked to water? Is it linked to the service lines of water? Is it linked to infrastructure? I mean, what exactly is at the heart of this?
Well, it's definitely linked to infrastructure and just a system similar to Flint's, did not see any investment for decades, really. The pipes in some places are, a century old, and they've been decaying. But it's not actually clear what has caused these lead levels to rise. The city of Pittsburgh's Water Authority actually changed its corrosion control chemical back in April of 2014, and it's not clear if that may have also caused lead levels to rise, too, if the corrosion was beginning to leach lead out of the pipes. And again, that's another interesting coincidence with Flint, because that's, of course, the month that Flint switched its water source and started getting into all the problems it had.
So here's some sound. This is a new study from the Journal of Pediatrics, finding that Pennsylvania has the sixth highest rate of kids with elevated blood levels in the country. Pittsburgh pediatrician Dr. Amy Nevin told the local CBS station there it wasn't the water that was responsible.
I want to be sure that we don't lose focus on what we know is dangerous to children. When the homes of these children in my practice were evaluated, regardless if the year was 2005 or 2016, the culprits of the poisoning in each home were always identified as paint.
So it's not just water, it's not just pipes. I mean, there are other culprits here, as we hear the pediatrician talking about. Chris?
Yes, that's definitely true. I mean, in Pittsburgh and the surrounding county, Allegheny County, the health departments found that lead levels in children 6 years old and younger have actually been decreasing, and people think that's because of, you know, lead abatement programs with lead paint, lead soil. But some people are actually wondering if those figures, those statistics, may be masking, you know, the effects of lead in water, which may be subtler, but, you know, still affecting, you know, children.
Mm. So people are scrambling there in Pittsburgh, as I'm reading, as you have been reporting, and people who can afford it. Many are replacing the pipes in and around their homes. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. I mean, the city is, you know, it's got this mandate now. It's got to replace lead service lines. But people are being proactive, and they're getting the lines dug up from their properties as well. I did talk to one family that, you know, had done that, and it can be expensive. It costs them between $9,000 and $10,000 just to remove about 30 feet of lead pipe. So I think that's probably well above the average, but, you know, it can be a costly endeavor.
Yeah, and if you can't afford it, I guess you're just stuck.
Yeah, and one of the problems here is that the city is only replacing the public portion of the lead pipes. It says it doesn't have the authority under state law to replace, you know, what's under the private property. So they're trying to get the laws changed in Harrisburg, the capital of Pennsylvania, with lawmakers. But at this point, they're really just replacing, you know, they're doing these partial replacements, which can, you know, be problematic. Mark Edwards from Virginia Tech was very outspoken about, you know, doing full replacements, because when you only replace part of the line, you can dislodge lead from other sections and, you know, actually increase the exposure to people.
Mm. Let's get Janelle in here from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Janelle. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Go ahead.
I actually just want to go back to the first caller's question about when you have local municipalities that are neglecting or kicking the problem down the road. At what point does that rise to the level of liability, either civil or criminal? And, you know, what are the remedies other than the ballot box that we have to really pressure these officials to take action? So instead of what the first caller said was spending money on resurfacing roads and cosmetic repairs, they actually do have to allocate and prioritize the lead pipe removal.
Janelle, thank you. Michael Powell, I'll ask you that question. Janelle wants to know, you know, people that are kicking the can down the road in local government here, I mean, what's the liability?
Well, I think that the liability, there's not necessarily a huge liability for local government. So many of these problems occur in the home. That when you purchase your home, you have a house that has old lead paint. You have a house that has old lead pipes, and for many people, that's the homeowner's problem. So, but she said she doesn't like the idea of relying on the ballot box. But I think that's what it's going to take in the vast majority of cases. People are going to have to get interested, not only in the ballot box, but also with nonprofit movements. There are a lot of nonprofits that have taken this issue on, like Push Buffalo, that provides lead-safe housing for residents, low-income residents, frequently in Buffalo. The Green and Healthy Homes Initiative is a national organization that's working on providing healthy housing for people. So there are options. People can get involved. I don't think that there's a quick option. There's not an easy option. This is something that's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of interest from people. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. But getting involved in your local government, getting involved with your local and national nonprofits that do tackle these issues is going to be critical.
Chris Marr, Pittsburgh's water authority there is nearly $1 billion in debt, as I have been reading. What's the plan to fix this? I mean, I read here they want to borrow $1 billion to upgrade the water system. I mean, in the meantime, they're handing out free water filters. I mean, what's the plan beyond free water filters?
Yes. So they, the mayor and other officials want to restructure the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority because right now with its indebtedness, you know, it can't possibly borrow any money. So they want to restructure it. They don't want to privatize it, they say, but they want to have possibly some kind of private partner. And they want to borrow $1.5 billion to upgrade the infrastructure. $411 million of that is the estimate to replace all of the lead pipes. And they hope to do that over the next decade. I mean, there's other things happening. They're also digitizing old records. You know, as in Flint, Pittsburgh doesn't really know where the lead is buried. And they're actually going out surveying and, you know, digging up some lawns to find out where the lead pipes are as well.
Chris Maher with The Wall Street Journal. Really appreciate your time and your reporting on this important topic. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.
Joining me now via Skype from Flint, Michigan, Naira Sharif, director of Flint Rising, a coalition to advocate for families impacted by the Flint water crisis. Naira, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Hi. Thanks for having me.
We don't want to forget Flint in this conversation where this story was originally and initially recognized as a significant problem. Tell us how things are in Flint today.
Well, not much has changed in the lives of Flint residents. Actually, right now we are bracing for water shutoffs because we've never stopped being charged for poison water. And people who refuse to pay for poison water are now facing water shutoffs. In addition, we have a couple of weeks ago, we had six people who were arrested at a community meeting basically for asking questions and wearing hats.
Okay. Well, here's some residents of Flint protesting last week in response to what you're just saying here. They're protesting Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, calling for his arrest, actually, over the state's role in Flint's contaminated water supply.
Arrest Snyder now! Arrest Snyder now! Arrest Snyder now!
How has the governor responded in these months since the crisis?
Well, not to the level that he should have responded. Everything that we've received has been through a protracted struggle. Right now, we have a settlement agreement with the state of Michigan. The Natural Resources Defense Council and the Michigan ACLU filed a Safe Drinking Water Act lawsuit that was recently settled the end of March. And it mandates that the city of Flint will have lead-free and galvanized iron-free service lines within 3 years.
Mm. But in the meantime, people are still being charged for and paying for lead-tainted water in Flint. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, it's true.
And we're hearing stories of liens being placed on people's homes because of financial strains of all this. I mean, it's still a very difficult scenario there for people.
Yes, unfortunately, within the city of Flint, people who refuse to pay their water bills, they'll have a lien put on their property taxes. And because of a previous law about 10 years old, shortening the tax foreclosure process, people can lose their homes within 2 years.
Mm. And schools, how are schools dealing with this? I know this was initially quite an issue for parents and for teachers and for water in these school communities?
Well, it's very precarious depending on which school that you're going to. We have a public school. We have a variety of charter schools. And we do have a few private parochial schools. And unfortunately, it changes depending on which school your child goes to.
Here's Flint resident Melissa Mays. She's the founder of the advocacy group Water You're Fighting For, speaking to CBS last year. She's the mother of three. She noticed a change in her kids, including convulsions. They started having convulsions, skin lesions, memory, and hair loss. Here she is.
When I hear my son get up at night and cry because his bones hurt, and there's nothing I can give him, there's nothing I can do for him to take away his pain, I feel completely helpless.
Mm. Gosh, you hear that parent there. I mean, what are parents saying to you, Naira? They must be scared to death still in Flint.
Yes, there's a lot of trauma related to this because you listen to people in authority, you listen to your government, and not only do you discover that they poisoned you, but they try to cover it up. So that in itself is its own point of trauma, in addition to just people who are just trying to navigate and make the best choices for themselves and their families and sifting through information from a variety of sources.
Let's get Meredith in here, calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Meredith. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jean. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
We have a kid who tested positive for lead when he was a baby. He's two now, and we went through the process of getting a water filter for our house. Everything in our house had been repainted, and we had a lead inspector come through who actually tested the soil at our house in the front yard, and said that the highest areas of lead contamination were closest to the street, and that he's found this in a lot of places that when people actually have held the paint companies responsible, but not any of the any of the gasoline companies responsible, who were using lead in the gasoline, and so a lot of areas are contaminated from that, and so we went through. We have a park also across the street from our house, and we have not been able to find out from the city whether they've ever done any lead testing, so we did it ourselves.
And what did you find? What did you find in the park? Oh, you're waiting.
We were just waiting, yeah. So I wanted to add to the conversation the lead contamination in the soils and the car company's responsibility in that.
Meredith, thank you so much up there, Providence, Rhode Island. Michael Pell, speak to Meredith's experience. I'm sure you've heard that one as well.
Absolutely. The contamination in soil from the fumes, from the exhaust fumes from leaded gasoline is a huge issue. And that's another reason that you see it so often in urban environments. It's not just the paint. It's also that there were a lot of cars going through there for decades, spewing out a toxic exhaust. And so, and then also the soil can be contaminated from, as we talked about earlier, industrial waste as well.
Right.
And it's really interesting to see her taking a proactive role to test the soil. And that's what we are hoping that we could help provide too, is some additional information for communities. So they could look at the number of kids who are being tested, the percentage of kids that had high lead levels in their own neighborhoods, and determine whether or not they thought that enough kids were being tested, to determine if there was a high percentage of kids with elevated lead levels and they thought, man, I want to talk to my health department and figure out why this is. Is it soil? Is it paint? Is it water? And if they don't get good answers, to press for good answers.
How expensive is it to test yourself? And how easy is it? How do you do it?
So there are a variety of ways of testing, having your children tested for elevated lead levels. There's a capillary test, which is a basic finger prick test that draws a little bit of blood. Those are pretty inexpensive individually. To test the soil. You know what? That varies depending on what lab you're going to go to with the soil results. It would have been interesting to see how much Meredith was paying. But it depends. I mean, we did a lot of talk with people about testing water. And that seemed to be about $50, depending where you went, because there are states that have really good, aggressive co-ops, like Penn State Cooperative Extension, that will provide water testing quickly and affordably for people. But then there are other states that don't have those resources for their residents. Mm.
Nayara Sharif, before you go here, I'm just curious why you think lead poisoning garnered so much attention in Flint when it's happening, appears to be happening in so many other places in this country.
Well, the short answer is because we were organized and we refused to take the state's narrative as statements of fact. And we knew that something was wrong with our water and refused to take no for an answer. And we organized and we pressed a variety of levels of government and got Virginia Tech to dispel that narrative that our water was safe to drink.
Well, good luck to you there in Flint, Michigan. Nayara Sharif, director of Flint Rising. Really great to have you with us today. We are diving into a big investigative piece from Reuters about America's lead crisis. More after this break, including your calls. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, partnering with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to deliver all you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come pre-measured, so there's no food waste. Recycle the packaging or mail it back, postage-free, and Blue Apron will recycle for you. Rediscover how fun cooking can be. Enjoy seasonally inspired recipes and explore new cuisines. No commitment. Get meals only when you want. Get your first three meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/OP.
I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We're looking this hour at lead poisoning in communities beyond Flint, Michigan, across the United States, and you can join the conversation. Are you drinking bottled water? Is it out of necessity or an abundance of caution? Will you test the soil before you get the garden planted this year based on what you're hearing? The CDC recommends action when a child has 5 micrograms of lead per decibel, but damage begins at even lower levels with lead exposure. Here is some sound from a report from last June at the Kansas City Star.
3 micrograms per deciliter. Decreased test scores in elementary school. Difficulty learning reading and math. 4 micrograms per deciliter. Speech delays and hearing loss. 5 to 9 micrograms per deciliter. 30% more likely to fail third grade reading and math tests.
We're talking with Michael Pell this hour, data reporter for Reuters and co-author of an investigative series on the hazards of lead poisoning called Unsafe at Any Level. Joining me now from Baltimore, Maryland is Dr. Alina Wen, Baltimore Health Commissioner and emergency physician. Baltimore is one of the cities identified in the Reuters investigation as having high levels of lead toxicity. Dr. Wen, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Nice to talk to you, Jane.
So
thank you.
So what is the story in Baltimore? What are you seeing there? What are the numbers?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to emphasize, it cannot be overemphasized, that there is no amount of lead that is safe in children, and that exposure to even low levels of lead can cause permanent damage to the developing brain. In Baltimore, we have been working on a combination of prevention and aggressive enforcement of lead regulations. And actually, we've made a lot of progress in the last 15 years. In 2002, the percentage of our children with lead poisoning between the ages of 0 and 6 was 12.2%. That number is now 1.2%. So we still have, though, unfortunately, hundreds of children who are lead poisoned every year, and even one child being lead poisoned is one child too many. But we have made a lot of progress. In the last 15 years, we have reduced the percentage of children with lead poisoning by nearly 98%.
So what have you done right there? What's working, Dr. Wen?
Prevention is absolutely important. So we perform outreach to pregnant women to evaluate for potential lead hazards. We educate families and providers about our law here, which does require testing in children at ages 1 to 2, although we also realize that by the time a child tests positive, that's often too late. I mean, our children should not be canaries in the coal mine. We should be identifying those lead hazards earlier. So here in Baltimore City, our issue is not with lead in water. We don't have lead in our public water pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And the vast majority of our lead hazards are from paint. And so what we do, too, is we conduct home visits to evaluate for potential lead paint hazards. The Reuters report identified certain areas in our city that has, unfortunately, much higher rates of lead poisoning. And what we have done since then is to, or not since then, but what we have done in general is to target those particular areas. We have community health workers and outreach workers who go to those areas, and they do education in churches and schools and neighborhood associations, including to our child care providers. And we educate about the importance of looking out for things like chipping and peeling paint. We talk about looking at soil as a source of lead, looking for toys and toy jewelry that may be recalled that may still be around. And ultimately, it is about prevention and also about enforcement, too. So we also work with landlords to develop abatement plans and prosecute those landlords that are still in violation of their agreement.
Hmm. Are there socioeconomic issues at play here, Doctor? Are low-income areas more vulnerable, would you say, based on your experience?
there are disparities everywhere we look. And if we look at a map of Baltimore City and we look at the areas of the greatest concentration of children who are lead poisoned, they completely overlap with areas of greatest poverty. They completely overlap with areas of highest infant mortality, with food deserts, with cancer mortality. This is a problem that we know that the that where our children happen to live unfortunately determines if they live. And lead poisoning is just one more example of these rampant disparities.
You say there's no level of lead that's safe for children. Is there treatment for lead poisoning?
There is. So if there is, if someone, a child or an adult, is acutely lead poisoned and they've ingested a large amount suddenly and now have problems such as kidney problems or they're vomiting or they have seizures, there is acute therapy that can be administered. The problem, though, is that by far the vast majority of our children are chronically poisoned. They may be ingesting small amounts of lead at a time, and their parents and caregivers don't know that that's happening. And so they often don't exhibit symptoms until it's too late, until permanent damage has been caused, including causing neurological defects, causing brain problems. And that's the problem, that by the time that these children are diagnosed, it often is too late in the sense that permanent damage has been caused. But there are treatments that are available, and actually the most important treatment is to remove all the different hazards that are around them. Whenever we diagnose someone or whenever a child comes to us having been diagnosed with lead poisoning, what we do immediately is we go to the home of that child and investigate any hazards that are in that house. We look for chipping and peeling paint. We instruct on how it's important for us, for example, to wash children's hands and toys, take off shoes while playing indoors. We also look at toys and toy jewelry and food and candies that may be imported that may also contain lead. So removing the source of lead contamination is the most important thing.
You talk about the permanent damage caused by lead poisoning, neurological problems. I mean, this is irreversible, right? Brain damage, developmental delays, speech problems, serious chronic conditions that last a lifetime.
That's exactly it. And that's why it's so important for us to not wait until a child is already diagnosed with lead poisoning. I mean, as an expecting mother myself, the last thing that I would want is for my child to be exposed without my knowing. The most important thing is to look for those hazards now. So pregnant women, expecting moms should look for chipping and peeling paint in their homes right now. Children and pregnant women should not be in housing that are undergoing renovation. If you live in a house or a child spends time in a house that's built before 1978, assume that the paint in their home, in your home, has lead unless tests show otherwise. And those are the types of things that we can do right now to protect our children, protect our families, because we don't want to have the devastating lifetime effects and wait until after our child has already been diagnosed.
Let me get Kateya in here from New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Kateya. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, so my daughter got tested back in 2010 or 2011. She was 10 months old, and she had lead levels of 25.2. I didn't know, but I was sanding the floors of layers of paint to dock off of my rent. I was living in New Orleans, Louisiana, and I was breastfeeding at the same time. And that's why her lead levels were so high.
And how old is she now? How's she doing now?
She's 8 years old, and she's doing great, but she does have a learning disability that she struggles with. It makes academics really difficult. She has dysgraphia, which is kind of like dyslexia, but it's with your writing, and everything gets mirrored, even numbers. You know, everything gets, like, flipped backwards. So it makes some things really, really difficult. But other than that, she's doing great.
Kateya, thank you very much for the call. Dr. Wen, it's about education, right? Teaching parents what needs to be done, what not to do.
I'm an emergency physician, and I've worked with so many parents who are so shocked and so saddened when they find out that their children have been exposed to lead without them knowing. And this is the thing. I mean, there's no, you can't look at something and know that there's lead paint in there. If that's the case, then we would absolutely avoid lead. But there's no, I mean, lead is odorless, it's colorless. You don't know that it's contaminated in soil, in paint, in water, et cetera. And that's why parents have to be on the lookout. Easier said than done, I know, because there are so many potential hazards around us. But that's why it's important to know what is the main cause or the major causes of lead poisoning in your particular area. Again, the situation in Baltimore is different from Flint, different from other parts of the country. For us, the lead in water is not the major issue, but lead in paint is the major issue. Mm-hmm. So understand what are the issues, particularly in your area, and watch out for those sources.
Let's get Bob in here from Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Bob. Thanks for waiting. You're on.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
There's an alternative to replacing municipal lead pipes, and that's to line them with high-strength thermoplastic films. Information is available on the American Chemical Society website if you want to look that up, or I can send it to you.
Mm-hmm. Bob, thank you very much. Michael Pell, jump back in here. I mean, there are a lot of thoughts about what to do here, but I guess it comes down to cost and who pays for this. And I'm curious what you see federally from the state level as far as, as far as the finances of all this.
So the state level commitment varies, obviously, across the country. You see some states that are very interested in this, and then other states that consider it somebody else's problem. I was talking to some officials in Utah, and they used the term Eastern Slum about three or four times in the course of an email to say that it's somebody else's problem. The federal government, President Donald Trump's recent proposed budget would not have tackled this problem. In fact, it would have slashed $4.7 billion from programs that, while not completely directed at lead abatement, are used frequently to create lead-free housing and fund other projects that municipalities and states rely upon to reduce the amount of lead in children's bloodstreams.
Let me play this sound. This is from the confirmation of hearing of Secretary of Housing and Urban Development in January, Ben Carson, testifying, telling Senator Elizabeth Warren that he would commit resources to address the 62,000 public housing units in need of lead abatement in this country.
Well, I can assure you that I will very much be working with you on that. 310,000 cases right now of children, each of which cost us enormous amounts of money. I don't think people even calculate that into that when we're talking about it. So, yes, I will be very vigorous in that area.
Michael Pell, what does Secretary Carson, Dr. Carson, propose here?
So Dr. Carson has, in his confirmation hearings, he committed to tackling this problem. And as a pediatric neurosurgeon, he has seen more of the negative consequences of lead exposure than most people across the country. He's very familiar with this problem. I've spoken with advocates who really believe that this is an issue that he's interested in and wants to take on. The Trump budget proposal did not support his interest in this, but we'll see how federal spending turns out going forward. The recent agreement that Congress came up with for a temporary spending bill has increased HUD funding and has increased dramatically increased HUD funding for its lead program. So Dr. Carson looks like he's going to get an opportunity to come through with a solution here, or a partial solution.
From our website, Michael, Robert has this question. I looked at the map in the Reuters report on your website. I see there is no data reported for most of the South. Can you explain that?
We got data where we could. We went to states. We went to the CDC to obtain testing results. We did obtain data from Alabama. The state of Louisiana had real problems providing us with data. They said that they erased some of their data by accident, but we managed to obtain the data from the CDC. Other states like Georgia and Tennessee said, nope, we're not going to provide you with this information. We think that there are privacy rights involved here, and we're less concerned with allowing communities to identify high rates of lead poisoning among children or where children are not being tested.
Mm. Dr. Nguyen, do you suggest mandatory blood testing across the board for all children?
We have mandatory blood testing for children ages 1 and 2 here in Baltimore City, although the rates are not nearly as high as we would like. So for that, education is very important. But I would say I would want to go beyond that, because testing is important, but we're only picking up children after they have been lead poisoned. Ideally, what we need is for preventive environmental inspections of homes to be done prior to that child even being exposed in the first place. And even beyond that, abating all homes of lead paint is important. And we hope that federal funding will come through to assist us with these important efforts. We really should not just be looking at the cost of that intervention. We should also be looking at the cost of doing nothing, the cost of having a child with lifelong disability, the health and economic cost of for that child and for their family. This is a public health issue, and it's also an economic issue, one for our country as well.
Michael Pell, I'll give you the last word here. I was looking through your reporting and trying to see some of the commonalities between the cities impacted. And I guess the bottom line from your study is no one is immune from this problem. No one is immune from lead exposure. I mean, what is your message based on your many months of reporting and research on this issue?
Well, what we found is that most communities believe that the money that they spend to prevent children from being exposed to lead has a good return on investment. And so whether the community be an affluent community or whether this be a city that really is struggling financially, every dollar that they put into preventing children from being exposed to lead is going to return to them on less costs for special education, less cost for the criminal court system, because behavioral problems and impulse control problems definitely are a consequence of childhood lead exposure.
Well, Michael Pell, your report was illuminating and in many ways disturbing, but we appreciate you bringing it to us today. Michael Pell, co-author of the investigative series on the hazards of lead poisoning across this country called Unsafe at Any Level. Michael Pell, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
And Dr. Leanna Wen, Baltimore Health Commissioner and emergency physician. Doctor, thank you for your input, for your perspective and your work. Thanks very much. Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.